set phasers to stone as we take a trip to the future. Not our future, a differing timeline future where it hasn't diverged yet. More nerdy stuff on today's episode of That Song From That Movie. Macaroni and cheese.
Nope.
Try another one.
What the hell is macaroni and cheese?
The response was supposed to be, everybody freeze.
Was it?
Apparently so. Work hard.
Play hard?
Do right. Thank you for joining That Song From That Movie, the journey through the very best and worst of movie songs. I am your Captain Jean-Luc Picard host, Dietrich, and we're joined today by a Captain James T. Kirk type, Alex.
A type.
Yeah.
What makes me a James T. Kirk type?
Because I needed one to put in the intro.
Okay. It's not because I'm a bit creepy.
Low bar.
I was after that alien Poo-Tang.
I'm sure Ben could probably guess what I'm going to say for him.
I've got my fingers crossed.
And we're also joined by Captain Benjamin Sisko.
There we go. I wish I had a voice as smooth as Benjamin Sisko. Or just a smooth in general.
Yeah, and well, apparently you're getting a microphone next week, a new microphone, so maybe it will next week.
Well, we shall see. I mean, it literally says on the reviews, you know, 5 stars makes me sound like Benjamin Sisko. So there we go. The reason I bought it.
So what have you guys been watching this week?
I have watched every episode of The Mandalorian, because I'd never seen it before, and finished it last night.
Both seasons?
Yep.
No spoilers. I've not seen the finale.
I will not spoil it.
In fact, I've not seen the last 2 episodes.
I will not spoil them.
What about you, Alex?
I watched the season finale of Taskmaster, though.
Oh, yeah, I watched that, yeah.
Okay, season. There's definitely been better. There was good moments and bad moments.
I feel like the lack of audience because of COVID and stuff has sort of really hurt it. When it goes back into the sort of auditorium, it doesn't have quite the same zing.
It all felt a bit awkward, didn't it? It felt like no one really knew what to do. It felt as well like no one was like hugely funny doing the tasks. Like, Johnny Vegas was good for some, you know, for something. And the part where Richard Herring had to do all the acting by himself.
But I think this was the first series where the best task, or at least the best outcome from a task, was one of the live tasks. And it was when Daisy May Cooper had to draw that hippo.
Hippo gate, yeah.
Yeah.
It was just a pure hatred of him for not knowing what it was. And it's like, what the heck is
that? That was a drawing of a cat. That was a drawing of a cat.
It's a drawing of everything other than hippo. Other than that, I also watched a lot of Wallace and Gromit, actually. Not because it's near Christmas.
It's not near Christmas,
it's not
Alex.
Near Christmas. I know, yeah, exactly. Christmas.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Giving away all the secrets behind the curtain, as always.
I literally went shopping for Christmas dinner stuff last night. 10:30 at Morrison's.
What are you doing? Oh, wait, is that just because to try and avoid crowds?
Yeah. There was only us and one other person shopping, and they were putting all the stuff out that lasted until the 28th. We managed to time it perfectly.
What a rare treat.
Anyone listening, get down to Morrison's now to get your Christmas dinner stuff.
As we release this episode in the middle of January.
In terms of what I've been watching, I have an update, and it's about Good Omens.
Oh.
Hell yeah.
So I've watched 2 more episodes. There's only one left, and I still don't think it's very good.
Give up. Give up.
The show still seems to be, hey guys, David Tennant's wearing a wig in this episode. How kooky.
Sounds good. Wait, where is it? Amazon?
Alex is already adding it to his watch list. I watched 1 episode, and that's enough. I'm a modern day man. You've got to catch me in the first 30 seconds or else I'm out.
Which is why nobody listens to this podcast.
I'm usually finished in 30 seconds.
Way.
So today's episode is the songs of the Academy Award nominated sci-fi romp Star Trek Beyond.
He's slipping that in there.
So to find out what was happening in the world when the movie came out, it's my turn this week. So the time is July 2016, if you can cast your mind back that far.
Wait. Go.
So the world got a little bit healthier as Pokemon Go dropped into the App Store for the very first time. Now, I played it for years, all the way up until the release of Generation 5. Eventually, a mixture of pay-to-win and lockdown killed my enthusiasm for the game. But man, what a summer.
Yeah, I mean, I assumed you... What a summer of what, 4 years? I assumed you were still playing it, I'm shocked to learn that you've stopped.
Yeah. I got fed up. I don't want to input my own money into a free game to win.
You were the last bastion. If you're gone, then is anyone playing?
I know a lot of people that start playing.
I jump in to say my wife has just got back into it. Clearly, the pay-to-win is all she's about.
All I really remember of playing the game, which was like a good like 3 weeks, was just people like in the street going, "Are you playing that Pokemon game?" Like sometimes I was
just walking around with your dad.
That was you.
You play Pokemon Go, but sometimes I was just genuinely walking on my phone, and then you have to be like, "Well, why are you even talking to me? Who are you?"
I never played it.
So it was a bad month for Chris Evans. That's Chris Evans, as in the British TV and radio presenter disliked by everybody, as he was dropped from Top Gear, and then a week later, the revival of TGI Friday was also cancelled.
God, I remember. I think I watched one episode of that TGI Friday. That was weird TV.
Yeah, it was awful. I ended up watching it in Mexico because it was the only thing it was on an English speaking channel, and it was the same episode every day. It was so bad. So the discussion really is up to you here. Do we talk about Top Gear presenters, or do we talk about how much everybody hates the British Chris Evans? Because I assume you both hate him as well.
Yeah, but what confuses me about this is that if everyone hates him, why does he keep getting jobs?
I don't know. I don't get it.
I think there's a demographic between like 50 and 52 that might still don't mind him.
I don't know if he got axed from the Radio 2 breakfast show. But he's not on it anymore, is he?
No, he went to Virgin or something. Yeah.
Show. But did they like go, "Chris, here's as much money as you want, make your own show"? Because if they did, what were they thinking?
Maybe they was hoping it was the other Chris Evans. Was like, I can't believe he said yes. Even with all the Marvel contractual obligations, he said yes.
I mean, I would definitely be more likely to listen to that show, just to see what the heck it was.
Yeah, me too.
They were very confused when he showed up.
So it was a good month for Chris Evans. That's Chris Evans as in the American actor, all-round nice guy who is liked by everybody. As the Hollywood Reporter confirmed that Evans' Captain America Civil War paycheck was a cool $15 million. So the discussion here is up to you. Do we talk about the MCU, or do we talk about how much everybody loves the American Chris Evans?
I mean, what I'd rather talk about is his finest role, which is not another teen movie. Now, was that not such a great film?
Playing the jock in Not Another Teen Movie.
It's a banana split.
Do you only think that because he ends up appearing in the Marilyn Manson video?
As the character? He does, doesn't he? Course,
yeah.
I forgot about that.
We're going to have to do Not Another Teen Movie at some point.
Yeah, maybe.
What do you mean, maybe? We will do it at some point, surely.
I thought you were going to say his finest role D ever was in Fantastic Four Rise of the Silver Surfer. But
it's Dolce.
Another thing we're going to have to do.
I can't remember that episode.
That is where our show peaks, isn't it, once we've done that one?
Yeah. For all of those that don't know, Dee is consistently contacting Simon Webb to see if he'll come on the show and do an interview about Ride the Storm from Rise of the Silver Surfer.
If everyone wants to help by messaging Simon Webb and asking him to come on the show, that would really help.
That would definitely be the peak.
What also happened in July 2016 was the release of Star Trek Beyond. So it was directed by Justin Lin and was written by Doug Jung and Simon Pegg. And it's the second follow-up to the fantastic 2009 Star Trek, in inverted commas, reboot, but more like a spin-off, let's say. So I'll do a plot synopsis, but of course you guys already know what the synopsis for this film is because you've both seen it.
Wrong.
Okay, so I better do that plot synopsis then.
I'm looking forward to hearing it. Lost.
When the USS Enterprise crashes after an attack by the evil dictator Kral and his swarm of drones, Kirk, Spock and crew must find a way off a hostile planet and stop Kral before he destroys the Federation. Along the way, they run into Jayla, who is living inside a previously crashed Starfleet ship on the same planet. So, what do you guys think of this movie? I guess, Ben, you might as well go first.
I might as well, because Alex hasn't seen it. Yeah, I really enjoyed the film. I was quite shocked when it came out and that how, because it didn't do well at all, did it, in the box office?
It did not.
Which was really surprising, because I didn't like Into the Darkness. Is it Into Darkness?
Yep.
Yeah, I really didn't like that film. And Star Trek, the 2009 film, I think is fantastic. I wouldn't go as far to say I'm a Trekkie, but I've watched a lot of Star Trek, and probably not the best Star Trek by general consensus. I think the first stuff I watched was Voyager. But yeah, I think the film seems like a more of a hark back to the sort of episodes and that sort of style. It feels like very much just a mission off of one of the series. But with the sort of cinematic adventure beats that fit more a sort of movie media style,
I really
enjoy it.
And what about you, Alex?
Well, as has already been revealed, I have not seen this film. But I think more so is I didn't know that this film existed until recently. And I've seen the first two films. And when you said Star Trek Beyond, I was like, that's the second one that has Benedict Cumberbatch in it. I've seen that one. And then when I went to look, I was like, no, that's called Into Darkness. What the heck is Star Trek Beyond? And then I realised that there was a third one. I was like, why did I have no concept of this film being released? And then I was like, oh, yeah, wasn't there, there was talks of like a Star Trek film that was going to be written by Quentin Tarantino. I was like, but this surely can't be that. And it isn't. So, yeah, that's all I've got to say on it, really. Don't know anything about it. I've seen the first two. Enjoyed the first one. Second one was kind of okay until sort of like the midpoint. And then it went off the rails. I read a bit of the reviews. And it seems like it had like quite a good critical reception.
Yeah, it was really well received.
But from what I could gather, it was maybe released at the same time as a few other big films. And maybe that's why it flopped at the box office. But I say flopped, yeah. It made like 350 million or something.
It was like a break even, so not considered a success, but not a failure either.
Yeah, but knowing now that it exists and that it seems to be well reviewed, I think I will try and watch it at some point, if I can.
If it ever appears on any streaming service in the UK.
Yeah. I mean, are they planning, I don't know if you had this in your notes, Steve, but are they planning on doing another one afterwards? Possibly written by Quentin Tarantino, possibly not.
That is true, yeah. He apparently has written the script and handed it over, but it's R-rated apparently, so the production company are like, do we want to do this, do we not?
It's probably because it's a bit like, well, what's the point of doing a Star Trek film where it just takes place entirely on the SS Enterprise? But then again, so did so many of the episodes. But I'm guessing that that's what a Star Trek by Quentin Tarantino would consist of.
I think they'd just go to like the planet feet.
The planet feet, yep.
This planet only allows barefoot.
I mean, it takes his ability to make an inappropriate racial commentary to an interplanetary level.
That's true, actually.
The Tarantino... get him to make a space film. Get him to make his own space opera or whatever, science fiction touched by other genres. Why does he have to make the Star Trek film? It detracts both from their own things in their attempts to make the other thing. And I think the comparisons will only be a detriment to both.
Yeah, and if it's not... like R-rated, like a full-on, let's say, a Tarantino film, people are just going to complain that it wasn't what they were sold.
Yeah, and we've already got Samuel L. Jackson in space.
Yeah, well, it was actually released a few months after The Force Awakens, which completely took the wind out of its sail.
Yeah, that's
one of the reasons why it didn't do too well.
I mean, J.J. Abrams was involved in the original one, which is why he eventually was involved in Star Wars, isn't it? So, was he still involved in this one?
Just as a producer.
Just as a producer. Did he direct the first one?
Yeah, and the second one.
And the second one.
I think the reception of the second Star Trek film is why he didn't want to do The Last Jedi, because of the backlash he got from doing another one similar.
Yeah, because the second one, not to go into any spoilers, but the second Star Trek film of the reboot was kind of a remake of an old one, wasn't it? Or it certainly was playing on a remake of an old one.
Yeah, it starts as its own thing and then halfway becomes a remake of Wrath of Khan.
Yeah. The director for this, Alex, though, you know who Justin Lin is, don't you? One of the contributors to the greatest franchises of all time.
Go on.
Fast and Furious.
What, is he one of the directors?
I think, how many have you done, D? Like six?
Yeah, he's directed quite a few of them and definitely like had a hand in nearly every single one of them in some capacity.
What a guy.
Are we talking like the later ones or are we talking like the early ones?
The later ones. I don't think he did anything with the first two. I think it's all the ones since then.
Wait, so you're like, saying his first one was Tokyo Drift?
It was, yeah. I'm pretty sure it was.
But in a lot of ways, Tokyo Drift was the one that set up the franchise element, wasn't it?
So, the movie introduces the character of Jayla. In the script, Simon Pegg explained that she was written to be a Jennifer Lawrence type, as in they wanted Jennifer Lawrence to play the role.
Yeah.
Eventually, they decided they couldn't get Jennifer Lawrence and just named the character after Jennifer Lawrence.
Oh, yeah. For all the imagined smart little nods in this film, that's very lazy.
I was reading through the trivia, and there was loads of, like, the USS something-something is a reference to episode 6 something da da da. And I was like, I'll just put this one about Jayla being from Jennifer Lawrence. But seeing as there's three songs in this movie to talk about, I think we should crack on with the first one of that. So, three songs. Two are written for use in the movie, whilst the other is an older song given a prominent role. I'll just name the three songs now. So it's Sabotage by the Beastie Boys, Sledgehammer by Peter Gabriel, and Lost in the Stars by Zhang Ji.
Is it Rihanna?
I like the idea that Peter Gabriel somehow wrote Sledgehammer for Star Trek Beyond.
Honestly, for a second, like, I was just... my mind was like, oh my god, is that a Peter Gabriel song? In my head, I was literally like, because I remember when I looked Googled, when I went onto YouTube, the first thing that came up is Peter Gabriel Sledgehammer, obviously. And I was just like, yeah. Oh my God, is that the same song? And I never realised.
Okay, so we'll start with the, as the movie describes it, classical music. Classical music song, Sabotage by the Beastie Boys. Obviously, it's the most easily recognisable of the three songs I've just mentioned. And I think it's fair to say it's nothing to do with this movie, why it's recognisable whatsoever. So what do you guys think of this song?
One of the best songs of all time. I mean, oh, you just can't, there's just so much to love about this song. The video is amazing. Like, it's great. I used to watch it so many times on, like, Kerrang. The amount of times I've been on a night out, the song absolutely drops. It's amazing. It's used in Star Trek, the first film. It's great.
Yep.
But in this film, in this film, incredible. And the Beastie Boys are awesome anyway, but this is their best song. Fight me.
Intergalactic's better.
See you outside, D.
And Intergalactic has a Spock reference, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
I do like the song, obviously. I have a similar relationship to it as Ben does, maybe not quite as strong. The part I really enjoy about
Where's the passion, Alex?
Well, I mean, I'm trying to bring it, but the part I really like about the song is the bass solo. To bring it down. Yeah, when everything else drops and then that bass solo kicks in. I think that's probably from playing Guitar Hero 4, maybe, whichever one this song's on, and being forced to play bass by my brother.
Everyone's always forced to play bass.
I liked the use of... I mean, I watched the scene. I've not seen any of the film, as we've discussed, but I did watch the scene, and I did very much like the use of the song in the scene. And I liked the characters in it were sort of like toe-tapping and nodding along to it as it was playing. And then I was like, oh my God, it's Matt Parkman. What's he doing there?
Yeah.
If it's sci-fi, expect him.
Well, if it's anything to do with J.J. Abrams, just expect that guy to show up at some point.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, in the first... I keep saying first, we know what I mean. Not the 11th Star Trek film, whatever. Young Kirk is shown playing this song whilst driving his stepdad's car, which is long-term... story telling.
I like that a lot.
Ben.
Yes.
Do you remember my message to you about Sabotage in the movie back when it came out?
Oh God, no.
Weirdly, it's one of the few messages I just remember off the top of my head. It was just something along the lines of, if you'd have told me that I'd be watching a Star Trek movie in the cinema where the solution is to play Beastie Boys at full blast out of a Starfleet ship, I would have been pissed off. But instead, I was in the cinema smiling ear to ear because it was such a fun cinema moment.
Yeah, and it kind of... I don't know if it's because of the song, how good the song is. It's very easy to see that as, like, so gimmicky. And, like, they're literally defeating an alien enemy army through the use of Beastie Boys. It's anarchistic in a whole new level. I think you just go with it, you just ride with it so easily. And they do really well to edit it to the song, to like the beats.
Yeah.
Especially the is it ad rock sort of wah! As it like just basically explodes.
I did like coming at this from a point of view of not seeing any of the film and understanding zero of the context. I was a bit confused as to what was going. Like first, I didn't really know that they could hear the music. Then I was like, oh no, they can hear the music. The music is part of the scene.
Yep.
And then like, why are they playing the music? And why? What is it that's destroying all of these sort of weird flying sentient? I don't know. Like what looked like drones. So I don't. It was odd. But
do you want us to explain?
Enthusiasm.
Essentially, the drones communicate on the same frequency as music being played, so by playing the music, it stopped them from being able to communicate with each other and they could destroy them easier.
I think it's something like FM waves is like the way that, because they're so sort of like a rudimentary vehicle compared to sort of modern technology that they can't be defeated by modern technology. So the way is radio waves.
Yeah. Get an old boombox and absolutely...
Yeah, literally, yeah, it's Say Anything style, it's John Cusack at the window.
Makes sense.
Sure it does, Alex. Sure it does.
Okay, we'll move on to the next song. Unlike what I said before, it's not Peter Gabriel, it's Rihanna's Sledgehammer.
Sledgehammer.
Thank you. Which plays over the credits and is the first ever official movie tie-in song for the Star Trek franchise. Alex, what do you think of this one?
I listened to the song first. I was like, this... I mean, obviously it's Rihanna singing it, but it sounds really like a Sia song.
I literally was going to say that exact thing. That's so weird.
And it's written by Sia, isn't it?
Oh, it's written. Oh, well, that's...
So I was like, It sounds like what happened was Sia sang a version of it, sent it to Rihanna, was like, yeah, you know, something like this. And then she just was like, okay, and did that. And then sent it back. Because it just sounds like Sia. It's a Sia song sounding like Sia, but it's by Rihanna.
The ridiculously high, long notes.
But just everything about it, it's like some sort of substance within the song that you can't quite put your finger on that makes it, like, inexplicably a Sia song. And that's what it is. But it's quite a good song. I quite enjoy listening to it.
Yeah.
A lot of power, a lot of range, a lot of passion. I enjoyed the video as well. It was very sci-fi.
Come back to that. Ben, what do you think of the song?
I'm quite similar. I mean, I must say that sort of the weird sort of high note just before the chorus does catch me off a bit. I'm just very much like, you know, as I always think, and I think it just brings point to that interview Sia did on Graham Norton, which is like, I can't reach those notes. And when I'm performing them live, I just point the microphone to the audience. And every time I hear those notes, especially if I think, oh, it's a Sia song or a song that sounds like her, I just think, yeah, you weren't making that note. That's a synth note. Cheat you. And I imagine Rihanna's I imagine Rihanna's the same. But yeah, it's a decent song. It looks like it's set on the planet where Captain Kirk fights that creature, you know, that Gorgon, yeah, whatever it is.
Yeah, I thought the same thing as I was assuming that it's an intentional play on that. But, like, the other thing as well to mention is that I had no knowledge of this song either. So the film, this song, which was the song for the film, completely passed me by. Because it wouldn't have surprised me if I recognised the song, even though I didn't know the film, because with it being Rihanna, but no, yeah. No, I have no concept of either.
Yeah, I couldn't remember it until I started it. I mean, I was like, I think I vaguely remember hearing this in the cinema as I was walking out after the film. So, yeah, the music video, let's go with that. So, it's really something.
She can pull off an alien.
Yeah, so I'll just describe it here, but people haven't seen it. So, it's basically an alien Rihanna singing and dancing on a sort of dusty, rocky planet with the drones from the film flying around her. It's got a lot of colour to the point where I assumed it was them reusing like a 4K TV preview video that you'd seen Curry's. Like, it looked like a Sony Bravia advert.
A lot of strobe lighting and light stretching across distances.
Yeah. Very weird, because after I saw it, I went out and bought an OLED TV, so...
8K.
8K, boys.
Did you think that this music video was very cinematic in scope, in the way it looked?
A little bit, yeah. Yes. I enjoyed that Rihanna had no eyebrows. If that means it's cinematic.
Well, I didn't notice the eyebrows. But this, interestingly, is the first ever music video to be shot entirely on IMAX cameras.
Nice.
Right. I think it shows.
Yeah, maybe.
Did Christopher Nolan direct it?
Spike Jonze directed it.
The Rihanna video?
Nah, I'm joking.
I was about to say, Spike, you're getting around, boy.
I don't know who directed it, to be honest. It wasn't on the Wikipedia page, which I'm definitely not reading now.
do you know how much it cost to make? Was it more than the Dying of a Day video by Madonna?
No idea. Doesn't say.
Probably not. It's probably still not.
Yeah, fun fact, Madonna invented IMAX.
She did.
It's not true, guys, by the way.
I didn't want to comment just in case it was true, I didn't know.
Was that like a Margaret Thatcher in Whippy Ice Cream kind of situation? Yeah. I thought.
Would you agree that Rihanna seemed like an odd choice? But not because of the music style, but because she's too popular for Star Trek.
It did surprise me. It did surprise me when I saw it, because it didn't seem like it was a good fit necessarily. Not that the song wasn't good, or maybe that is it, that she's like too sort of popular, too maybe mainstream, is the wrong word. It just seemed like it wasn't, it was an unusual, anachronistic fit.
Yeah, I agree, especially with like where the franchise was in the teens, the tenties, whatever you want to call it, that decade. What do you call it?
Yeah, probably the teens.
The tens.
The tens?
The teens or the tens is better than the tenties.
The 2010s. Yeah, the 2010s. I just go full.
Yeah.
Okay, in the 2010s, and the franchise wasn't doing particularly well. There was no TV shows. It looked like there was never going to be another Star Trek TV show again. Into Darkness hadn't done well critically. So, yeah, it just seems like the franchise wasn't exactly going in the right direction. So how they managed to get Rihanna is basically she was a big Star Trek fan herself. So she was introduced to the show as a child by her father. Basically echoes sentiments you hear from other actresses like Whoopi Goldberg, that because the Star Trek franchise, well, especially the Star Trek TV shows, offer such the franchise is so well diverse that you usually find that people from like black, Asian, minority, ethnic backgrounds are always fans of the franchise because there's representation.
here. That's a good point. And that's something I hadn't really thought of before, but it kind of does make sense. Because it was the first, was it first interracial kiss on screen or something from Star Trek?
Wow, that's a fact. Like a
rig. Shatner made sure it was him because it was supposed to be Nimoy.
Of course it was.
It was supposed to be Nimoy, and Shatner was like, no, it would be Kirk, wouldn't it? It'd be Kirk.
Of course it would be Kirk.
They're pushing boundaries while at the same time some are tightening.
Yeah, I mean, the story has, like, yeah, ups and downs, definitely. So, yeah, no, that's really interesting, actually, because I was wondering, like, what why would Rihanna do this? It doesn't, surprise me, but, yeah, no, that kind of really fits.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really good point.
So, talking of representation matters, are any of you guys from China?
The amount of leading questions you have.
I'm guessing the correct answer here is no.
If you went to see this film in China, you did not hear Rihanna's voice in this movie. Instead, you heard the voice of Zhang Ji, or to us westernized people, Jason Zhang, and his hit song, Lost in the Stars.
Wait.
So... Right, okay, because I had no concept of this film whatsoever, obviously. So this song, the third song that you asked us to listen to, replaced the Rihanna version.
Yes.
The Rihanna song.
Correct.
He didn't do a cover of that song. He did a different song and then replaced it. Okay, that explains a lot.
So yeah, audience, if you've not heard it, you are forgiven, but you should check it out. Because,
you should check
Alex,
it out.
What do you think of this song?
It's an absolute jam.
Is it really?
I didn't realise that there was a third song that I had to listen to for this episode. I'll be honest right now. And so I've just listened to it in the ad break. My God. You need to check this out. It's somewhere between like Justin Timberlake and as Ben, you said this, not me, has an Enrique Iglesias vibe to it.
I'm just really, really confused. You guys are going to have to enlighten me a bit. But when was the People's Republic of China in the Eurovision Song Contest?
I've also written it's very Eurovision in my notes.
It does sound like the the Chinese nomination for Eurovision Song Contest.
This song would win Eurovision. Definitely.
It probably would.
I don't Will, if you know how the voting goes, I don't know if there's many friends of China in Europe.
It's not quite Rise of the Phoenix or whatever it's called. It's not quite Euphoria.
Well, nothing, is like, anything Euphoria, Alex?
Nothing's Euphoria. It's
the greatest pop song. The greatest pop song of all time.
But I'd say, you know, this is up there. This could win Eurovision if it was entered.
Oh yeah. Definitely.
And the video as well. I mean, D, we've got to touch on that video because it's him like walking around some sort of mock-up of the SS Enterprise. But he looks so awkward. It looks like he's like won a competition to stand in. It might not even be him doing the vocals. D, you might know that. But it wouldn't surprise me whether they just picked some guy to stand there and play the song over the top.
Well, it is strange. It does look uncomfortable. And it's actually something my wife picked up when we watched the video. He doesn't look like he knows how to say the words. In English, it's like he's doing it phonetically, so he doesn't. There's a bit of a disconnect between his mouth movements and the words of the song. However, I then went on to watch a Chinese TV performance of this where he did it on stage, which was also very Eurovision. He had like people dancing around him whilst it was performed in front of an audience of Eurovision fans, probably.
Yeah, I saw that as well. He needs that advert director from Lost in Translation, you know, just the guy who's like more intensity to when he's doing the whiskey advert. But he looks like there's a lot of people shouting at him to do certain things and he hasn't got a clue.
So like, what is the performance like then on this live performance? Is he doing it in English or is he doing it in Chinese?
He is doing it in English, yeah.
And he can do it. So is it a live performance?
It looks to be, yeah.
Or is it mimed?
Well, no, I guess I don't know that.
And he still looks uncomfortable and awkward?
Yeah.
Yes. Like he won a competition.
That must be quite unusual that he's recorded it in English if it's likely to be a Chinese-specific post-credit song.
We did try look to see if there was like another version of the song where it's sang it in Chinese, and we couldn't find one. And I thought the English lyrics fit too well into the song for it not to have just been written and performed in English.
Yes, yeah.
Maybe they did it that way so that people didn't realise that it was a replacement.
That's a good point, yeah. You might be right there.
Maybe.
Who knows? It's just bizarre that they did this anyway.
Or Zhang Ji was convinced that this was his ticket to global stardom, and he thought it was going to be in the actual film that was broadcast across the world. But obviously, with censorship laws, he never realised, and still thinks that to this day.
Well, interesting you say that, because it wasn't just Rihanna who was replaced in China by Jason Zhang. The movie's poster also replaced Chris Pine, Zachary Quinto, and Sophia Vitella, the person that played Jayla, with a giant picture of Jason Zhang in Starfleet uniform.
Actually.
For real, there.
What?
It's an entire poster of him in uniform with like the drones going down one side. And that's the poster they sold it on.
People going to the cinema to watch what is likely a 2-hour pre-credit scene that they think building up to the Zhang-Ji performance for 3 minutes.
This is the way it gets weird. It worked.
What? It wasn't...
China was the only region where the release was considered a success.
Because they all thought they were seeing a Jason Zhang concert.
Exactly. You know, they thought, oh, Jason Zhang's doing a sci-fi film. I'll watch that.
I love that awkward little rascal.
He has so many strings to his bow.
Karen talking about, I'll send you the picture of it.
It's interesting to find out that it was added afterwards, because when I was watching, I was like, this is a really weird selection of a song to put in. Like, where would this fit? Like, where did this come from? I just couldn't wrap my head around it.
Well, what's also weird about the song is it talks about the Force. It's the wrong franchise.
it did mention the Force. I thought maybe that was just like a bit of a joke. I didn't, yeah, but now I'm wondering. Definitely wondering.
Sent you a screenshot so you can react to that poster.
What a poster.
Audience, if you want to see it yourself, literally just Google Jason Zhang Lost in the Stars, and it's like the second, it's the only one, it's an article, it's the first one, it's not a link to the YouTube video.
Yeah. Bold choice for Captain Kirk, not going to lie.
Well, every character in the film. Yeah, dude, like looking at a person, you think it's like, oh, that's like some sort of cool sci-fi 3D concert that they must be doing.
I mean, as much as I love Sabotage by the Beastie Boys, I would have also have loved for this song to have replaced that scene. It would be brilliant. Cool. Okay, top five. Now, Alex, we all know you're a huge Star Trek fan. Seen all the episodes, haven't you?
I have seen all the episodes of the original Star Trek season one.
Unusually, that's the only season I've never watched. I've watched every other series of Star Trek apart from that.
Yeah, I'm similar. I've only seen like a handful of episodes. That's it.
So, I'm not going to be lying to you, Alex. This might be quite a hard top five for you.
Okay.
There's often a debate online. Who is the greatest Star Trek captain? But I think that's too boring of a choice. So I want to know which Star Trek captain would make the best manager. If you were in a job, which Star Trek captain would be the best manager? This was a list designed by Vulture magazine, not by me. So...
Well, I feel like the obvious choice straight away is Picard as the best manager.
Is Picard just like the most beloved Star Trek captain? It seems to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Usually he comes
Shatner, up top. Shatner wouldn't be a very good manager.
and neither would Chris Pine's Kirk.
Oh yeah, is he included in this?
I think it covers both. Both cinematic and...
Does it cover the recent show?
Yes,
like
it does.
Discovery
it does,
and,
yes.
Yeah, okay. For which I'm going to 100% believe in you because I don't know any of them.
Okay, well, from the new ones, I would 100% say that the Captain Pike in Season 2 Discovery would be a fantastic manager.
You're going well, D? You're going well?
Oh, but Captain Pike, though, he was the original one that Kirk took over from because he's in one of the original episodes, yeah.
So I'll give you some insight here. Captain Christopher Pike from Star Trek Discovery is third on the list, with such reasoning as, he seems like the kind of boss who teach you new skills, and then suggest unwinding with a game of ping pong that he wouldn't try all that hard to win, though he totally could if he wanted to. Now, D, number two is Jean-Luc Picard.
Ooh.
Apparently would be awe-inspiring, but sometimes may make confusing judgments. And you might never know if you truly knew him. Now, personally, I think number one is the obvious choice.
Sisko.
It's not Sisko, actually. Sisko is number four.
Oh, so Janeway.
Catherine Janeway. Oh, yeah, she'd be a great manager. Apparently the reasoning would be just the sort of boss you might have to complain about behind her back, but she's also the sort of boss you'd end up naming your first child after. Little Catherine Janeway, first name. And I've not seen a lot of Star Trek Discovery, but number five is Captain Philippa Georgiou, Michelle Yeoh's character.
That's an interesting choice to be on there.
Is it?
It is in the sense of how Discovery goes, yeah.
Well, yeah, true. I know that much. But yes, in general, Captain James T. Kirk should not be on the list. He would be a terrible manager. From a person point of view, the business would go straight in the ground. You might have a good sort of fiscal calendar one year, but, you know, in general,
It depends what department is in there, because, like, you know, like, if you guys have seen Mad Men and stuff like that, where they have, like, an accounts team, where all they do is, like, schmooze, like, people who they're trying to get into the business. I feel like he'd be pretty good at doing that.
Wait, so not the job, but the sort of the social, it'd be a great social.
Well, that is, Ben, that is the job.
I suppose.
If you've seen Mad Men, yes, you know the character of Roger Sterling, yes.
He'd be very much a good manager in the sort of the 60s.
Well, maybe even earlier than that.
60s is pushing it. Back to you, Dee.
Okay, cool. Thank you. That was a good list. It's now time for the ultimate question, which is going to be the best of the three.
Don't you dare, Alex. Don't you dare.
Okay, so.
Don't you dare.
What is the best song? Is it Sabotage, Sledgehammer, the Rihanna one, or Lost in the Stars? Ben, you can go first.
It's Sabotage. Stop being silly, guys. Alex, don't even think about it. Put down your sort of weird love of, like, 90s Europop for a second. And
right, okay.
Remember your roots, Alex. Remember those early days watching Kerrang.
What's the best song?
Yes.
If that's flat the question, the best song is Sabotage. What's the best song today? In terms of which one made me smile the most, is Jason Yeung.
I can't argue with the reasoning.
I mean, the use of Sabotage seems really cool in the film. They've utilised it really well.
You're going to be disappointed as well when you watch it, because you're not going to get the Chinese version of the film, so you're going to get the Rihanna song at the end.
Yeah, but I can just watch it on YouTube afterwards.
I'm also going Sabotage, which I don't think is a surprise to anyone, so it's a hat trick for Sabotage. Okay, so that brings an end to our episode about the movie Star Trek Beyond. Let us know which one you think is the best song, and you can do that on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is TSFTMPod. If you want to help out the podcast, you can do that in a handful of ways. One, you can share it on Reddit. Ben, what subreddit should they pick this week?
Oh, that's a good question.
No, Ben, you know.
The Zhangji subreddit, there we go. It needs to be shared on that. What's the Chinese social media? I forget what it's called.
Weibo?
Is it Weibo? There we go. Find a way to log on to Weibo.
The second way you can help us is on our Patreon. It starts from £1 a month. We have a new Patreon subscriber, so guys, say hello to Jack Thorpe.
Hello.
Hello, Jack. Thank you for patronising? What's the word?
Thanks for patronising us. Thanks for patronising us.
Yes. Patreon.com/TSFTM. And the final way you can help us is by buying our fantastic merchandise. Lots of different options on there, whatever you want, t-shirts, masks, books. The merch is tpublic.com/TSFTM. So all that's left now is to do some goodbyes. So it's goodbye from myself, goodbye, and goodbye from Alex.
Come in peace, shoot to kill, shoot to kill.
I was so close to picking a line from the firm.
And goodbye from Ben.
Like a pinch in the neck of Mr. Spock.
So goodbye, everybody. Bye.
See you later.
Make it so.
There's Klingons on the starboard bow, starboard bow, starboard bow.
It's life, Jim, but not as we know it, not as we know it, not as we know it.
We come in peace, shoot to kill, shoot to kill, shoot to kill.